Hello and welcome to another edition of Critical Q&A, the show where I answer your questions that you've left for me in the comments section of my Q&A videos. This week we're going to be taking up some more questions. I'm going to try to plow through a few. I've been getting some questions over the weeks that repeat or are very, very similar, so I'm going to combine a few of those and hopefully try to do a little catch-all on that. But before we get into the questions, I'd like to say that I've been working on the schedule now of getting more regular content out. I've now started a series called Critical Thoughts, which are more, PSA, public service announcement, short videos that I'll get out, fairly regularly. And I got one out this last week on the term I don't know and why that's very important in critical thinking. I was very happy about that. And, of course, I will be continuing to get out the critical Q&A videos each week on Sundays. And also, I've got longer topic videos coming out. In fact, I just shot one yesterday that will be coming out midweek this week, which will be expanding on the topic I brought up in that Critical Thoughts video. Go into more detail about occult mindset and how that versus critical thinking and how those things work. So I'm kind of excited to get that done and out this week too. But I wanted to say, if you have any content or subject matter or anything that you would like me to talk about or go over, it's not like I'm suffering from ideas, but I do want to know what you want to see. So don't hesitate to let me know. You can send me an email or leave it in the comments section and I will see it. I see every comment. And I'll be happy to take some of those up or look into those. And now let's go ahead and get started on some questions. Rob Graves. After all these years of ex-members coming forward with their own horror stories, I would like to know why the government has not stepped in to investigate this criminal organization. Do you have any insight into why and how they are still allowed to abuse its members? Rob, the short answer to your question is the First Amendment. The religious organizations in the United States are given a large degree of latitude in terms of their practices and how they interpret their religious scriptures and what they're allowed to do. In a general sense, I agree with that because the separation of church and state is important because otherwise the church can become, if you have a state-sanctioned church or a church which only the government approves of, then you can have a situation where the entire population can be subjugated or forced to believe things like that. It gets pretty ugly pretty fast. And I agree with the philosophy that the Founding Fathers were thinking with when they put the First Amendment together. Now, that being said, I don't happen to think that the Church of Scientology is really a religion. I think it's a money-making scam. But that's just my opinion. No court cares about Chris Shelton's opinion. So what happens is when this is brought into a courtroom, judges and lawyers get very wary of getting into judging or making rulings upon the religious nature of any group, not just Scientology. You have to think about this kind of in a broad sense. And Scientology has a lot of contracts, a lot of legal paperwork put together. And so far in the courts, when ex-Scientologists have gone to court and said, we were forced labor, slave labor, human trafficking, the courts have looked at that and said, well, yeah, but you agreed to be a Scientologist. You agreed to be there. Nobody was putting a gun to your head to do these things. You were a Scientologist. And as a Scientologist, you were doing X, Y, and Z. So how can we now say after the fact that's not religious practice? And that's kind of how it comes down. It seems to me, short of murdering somebody or, these guys have a lot of latitude, a lot of leeway, and no court has yet done, as far as I can tell, the due diligence necessary to really pierce the veil of why Scientology is not really a religion. That is a tough due diligence. That's a tough investigation to do, and that's why it's still the way that it is. So it's not good news, but I think that's the reason why that is that way. I don't think it has to stay that way. I think if real tangible evidence could come forward of these abuses, you know, like, I don't know, video of Miscavige or Sea Org executives really beating on somebody or something like that, then I think a criminal case could be made. And I think that would then open the door to all kinds of good things. But until that happens, we're sort of left with the interpretation of religious practice versus criminal activity. And sometimes we're not always happy with where the ball lands, the ball bounces and lands on that. So, Zsa Zsa Snoid. I have read about a dozen LRH books on Scientology from the early 50s, such as Scientology, A History of Man, and Have You Lived Before This Life? And I've done videos making fun of them because each book is spectacularly stupid. Did you read any of them when you were a Scientologist? And if so, how did you avoid seeing the idiocy his books exude on every page? Well, I've read all of Hubbard's books, or just about all of them, all of the basic Scientology and Dianetics books I've read, some more than once. And, you know, as I sit here right now, I don't really have an excuse as to how I, you know, I don't have some smart answer as to how I bought into those things, except to say that when you get into Scientology or any mass movement or any cult movement, you go in on a step-by-step basis. I've talked about this before, and every single point along the road is a point that you can easily agree with. You know, when you walk in the front door of a Church of Scientology, no one is talking about Xenu. No one is really even talking about spaceships or galactic civilizations or even past lives. That stuff doesn't come out for a while, depending very much on how open or receptive you seem to it. You walk in there talking about past lives, they'll open the door to it, but that's not what they're pushing on you on the first day. The first few days, they're just talking about, you know, or weeks or months, they're talking about work problems, family problems, personal problems. Those are the things that they're hooking you in with, and it's very easy to go in, have somebody listen to you in a very friendly fashion, and give you sensible, common sense advice, and you go, oh yeah, that makes sense, that's not too bad. Then you take the next step and the next step. So nobody is giving you Scientology, A History of Man, or Have You Lived Before This Life, as your very first book or introduction to Scientology. So once you've started swallowing some of the more common sense stuff, some of the more easy everyday life kind of things, and then you start gradiently, let's say you start getting the idea of past lives. All right, past lives, great, we've lived before. Fair enough. Once you like give in to that idea, and it's, you know, far from only Scientology that accepts that idea. I mean, Christianity believes that you have an eternal life. So the idea that you could have lived before is not really that far-fetched in a religious spectrum. You start buying into that, then you start going, well, if we've lived before and life goes back, you know, before Earth, if spiritual beings have lived millions of years, what was going on back then? You know, Star Wars, right? A long time ago in a galaxy far, far away. Scientologists love that, by the way. They just think that's the best beginning on the Star Wars thing ever. So anyway, you see my point. One step leads to another, and before you know it, you're buying Xenu and galactic confederations and people being transported around the galaxy in ice cubes. That's how it works. Terrence Donegan. Is it true that you were a member of the Church of Scientology for 27 years? Yes, it was 27 years. I got involved with Scientology, actually, my parents did when I was 4 years old, but I didn't officially start doing services until I was 15 years old. I joined staff when I was 17, and I was a professional staff member and then Sea Org member, Sea Organization member, until I was 42 years old. So, 27 years. Alexander Manikas. Hi, Chris. Thanks for the excellent videos and for being so balanced and grounded. Question. Do you have any idea, experience, or evidence as to the involvement of the intelligence community in Scientology? What about the fact that the FBI has never really done much about the organization, using the excuse that they cannot do much about a religious organization while they bulldozer other small religious communities. Much brouhaha has been made about the fact that David Miscavige is on a CIA informant list, which may be real or not. Some people have suspected that Hubbard was a sheep-dipped naval intelligence officer and that Scientology is a social experiment. What is your take? All right, well, you're asking about a lot of stuff there, most of which is pretty conspiracy-minded, and I think I've made my position clear on conspiracies. But all joking aside, specifically, I do not believe that that Scientology is some sort of CIA operation or social experiment, or that David Miscavige has ties to the CIA as an informant, or that there's some conspiracy going on behind the scenes. The reason I don't believe that is because I have no reason to believe that. I've never seen any compelling evidence pointing in that direction. And just because somebody somewhere on the internet said that that might be the case doesn't mean I'm buying it. I never in 27 years in Scientology saw anything even remotely like that. I also happen to know through direct connections that I have that the FBI was very seriously investigating Scientology and had plans to move in on the Int base and wanted to take action against Scientology. But courts and various things gave the indication that such a move would not be in their best interests. And by in their best interests, I mean it would be a waste of their time. Law enforcement officers, law enforcement officials at any level have only so much money to spend, only so much time to spend on whatever cases it is that they're doing. And if they don't feel that they're going to get a return on their investment, then they're not going to pursue a case. That's not always necessarily justice. It's the justice system. And those are two different things. And you got to understand that. And just because that happens doesn't mean there's some conspiracy going on. It's just how the justice system works. And if you look into that and talk to any district attorneys, prosecutors, lawyers, judges, anybody at any level of this, they'll break it down for you. It's not hard to understand. So in terms of intelligence community involvement with Scientology, I've never heard or seen anything like that. And as far as Hubbard's naval intelligence records being sheep-dipped, what that means is, for those who don't know, that means that that his existing public records are a fake. They're sheep-dipped. In other words, they've been put there as window dressing or as a cover story for the fact that Hubbard was actually a deep cover operative for naval intelligence and was up to James Bond type stuff in World War II. This stuff has been totally disproven already. Consult anything from John Atack, anything on Tony Ortega's blog about this, and you'll find documentation on it. It is not hard to find. So that's my take on it. John Doe. Hey Chris, what is your opinion on out-of-body experiences and past life experiences? I have had both with me and some of my PCs. Thanks for sharing your experiences. Okay, so what he's saying there is with his PCs, meaning he's actually practicing Scientology in the real world. I don't think that John Doe is an actual Scientologist officially in the church. He's an independent Scientologist outside of the church. I'm assuming that. So, as far as out-of-body experiences and past life experiences go, I would like to see real tangible evidence of that before I can say, thumbs up on those things being real. It's way too easy to subjectively imagine anything you want to imagine. And if somebody gives you, and it doesn't even require deep hypnosis to have a suggestibility that we've lived before, or that you are, viewing your body from a corner of the room. Imagination is amazing, and people can imagine all kinds of things whenever they want to. I've talked about memory and how memory is one of the least reliable things in a human being. So this is scientifically, been studied in detail. So where I stand on it is I would like to believe. I'd be more than happy. I'm wide open to believe that those things occur. And I do have spiritual beliefs that, that we are spiritual beings. But as far as, being able to say, yeah, that's factual, no way. I can't get behind that because there's no tangible, legitimate evidence that these things have actually happened. And when there is such tangible evidence of that, and I would really like to see it, not anecdotal evidence. I'm not talking about people's experiences or what they think happened to them. That's not the kind of evidence I'm talking about. I'm talking about real scientific evidence. When I can see that, and I do, I'd even hope to, then I will believe that those things exist. Sir Jacko, I'm curious to know how you and other ex-Sea Org members go about finding work when you get out. It must be especially hard for folks who have been in for many years. Not only do you have to re-examine and redefine yourself and your beliefs, I can't imagine how much of a mindfuck that must be, but you're going from a situation where your living expenses were paid for in exchange for your servitude to having to provide for yourself in the real world. How do you go about writing a resume or filling out a job application when you spent the last 17 years in a cult? Amy Skiba, after so many years in Scientology, what difficulties did you face, if any, transitioning to a non-Scientology life? I've received a few questions about this, and I made a video called Recovering from Scientology where I broke down various steps that I've been going through. But in terms of real-world, practical, how did I start, you know, how did I land, and how did I start making a living, and how do you transition? It's rough, you know, it's not necessarily easy, and the points that are being made in these questions are good points. Basically, you know, I'll talk about myself. I had certain life skills that were translatable to the real world, graphic design, computer programming, I learned how to do that. You know, and some degree of administration and clerical work, things like that. I can type, you know, 100 words a minute, that kind of thing. So I had some translatable skills. However, I put all this into a resume, and I had Church of Scientology on it. And when I first got out, I didn't know the horror with which employers would look at that. I just had no idea how badly Scientology was regarded in the real world when I first got out. So I was sending my resume out all over the place, and I was getting nothing back, no answers of any kind. And it was rough. And if you wonder why it is that a lot of, or you might not know this, but a lot of people who leave the Sea Organization will go be employed by a Scientologist. You know, they'll go get a job with a Scientologist, because that's the only place that those skills translate somehow. And that kind of also works in the benefit of the Church of Scientology, because it keeps them in the fold, it keeps them in the system. And in fact, that's the first job I got when I got out of Scientology, is I got a job with a Scientologist. And I happened to kind of, I was a hard worker, and I was very go-getter. That's one thing the Sea Org does give you as a work ethic. So I didn't have a problem working all the time. That came to the notice of somebody else, so that when that job with that Scientologist didn't actually work out, another, you know, couple who were not Scientologists, had nothing to do with Scientology, saw that I had valuable work skills, and they hired me, and that was through word of mouth. So that's how I transitioned, and then that allowed me some stability and to get my feet really on the ground. And thank God that happened when it did, because it was also during that time that I was going down the rabbit hole of Scientology on the internet and finding out just how corrupt and horrible and awful of an organization it was. So those two things for me, I guess you could say maybe I lucked out in that happening. You know, I'm a hard worker, so I don't know that it was all luck, but that was kind of what happened. Other people don't have such a smooth transition comparatively. Family is very helpful. Friends are very helpful. I know coming out of the Sea Organization, you're not going to have a lot of real-world friends, but hopefully you'll have some family that you could fall back on or assist with, you know. And there are people out in the real world, ex-Scientologists, who will lend a helping hand. They've been burned a few times in some cases, so sometimes they're not so willing. You know, when a person comes out of Scientology, or especially out of the Sea Organization, their head is in all kinds of weird places, and they can feel very entitled. There's a lot of feeling of entitlement, and the world owes me, and that's this sort of thing, which is just leftover Scientology crap that a person kind of has to get over. Thank God I didn't have too much of that, But I had plenty of adjusting to do. Family was of great assistance to me in that regard, which is why I consider myself very lucky to have such a great family. So that was my transitioning process. And from that, I can only offer bits of advice to others as best you can. You know, find people who can be of assistance and use whatever work skills you did have, because a lot of the skills in the C organization do translate over into the real world in one way or another, and you can land and build up an income, and don't go running around worrying about partying and worrying about, you know, making a lot of friends and all that kind of stuff. You gotta buckle down and actually get a life set up and then build from there, you know, and fortunately that's how I went about it. So Kenneth Cheshire. Chris, how long does Scientology have left, in your opinion? Will they survive this scrutiny? Dave Stewart. Do you think Miscavige even sees the church existing after he's gone? Could he imagine anyone else in control? Okay, this is probably the subject matter of most of the questions I've received, so I'm just bundling up a whole bunch of questions in these two little short ones here. I don't think that the Church of Scientology is going to last longer than David Miscavige, because David Miscavige has no turnover or secession plan in place of any kind. David Miscavige executed a successful coup of a power play when he took over Scientology, and he has been terrified ever since of somebody doing that to him. So, short version is, he has gotten rid of every single person who he ever has considered is a threat to his power. And he could care less about the future of Scientology. David Miscavige is in Scientology for one reason: David Miscavige. And the only thing he's doing is working to assure his own position and his own livelihood. And he's got this very wild, very expensive lifestyle. And he lives this lifestyle on the backs of all of the parishioners of Scientology and on the backs of the C organization. And he has got them fooled that he is this extremely hardworking, sweat and bullets, nobody cares about Scientology more than him. He's the only one who's actually seen to it that Scientology succeeds. And if any of these people would just step back and look at how unsuccessful Scientology is, then they might start getting the idea that maybe this guy's not, you know, is talking one thing and walking another thing. He's talking the talk, but he's not walking the walk. This guy is shooting Scientology down the drain. And he's been doing it for decades. And these people who follow him are just, I got no words for it anymore. It's so obvious to me at this point. But anyway, so no, there's no plan in his mind to turn Scientology over, to see to the expansion of Scientology, to see to it that Scientology continues on Hubbard's stated mission into eternity. Miscavige doesn't care about any of that. He's got full control of the reins of Scientology, and he's not about to give those up to anybody else under any circumstances. So I don't see David Miscavige being ousted, because he has the one thing he is really good at is making sure that nobody is in a position to get rid of him. So I don't see that as an end game for his reign of terror, so to speak. So he's either going to take off, or he's going to get old and he's going to die. And when either of those two circumstances occur, there isn't going to be anybody else in a position to take over and run the whole labyrinth of corporations and lawyers and the money and everything else, and it's going to collapse. And that's what I see happening. I could be totally wrong, but that's my take on it. John Anderson. Hi, Chris. Since leaving the Church of Scientology, have you pursued psychiatry? Without naming names, in general, what do former Scientologists think of psychology, since the church deems it evil? I have not pursued any psychology or psychiatry, although I have looked into those subjects. It was one of the first things, in fact, that I was looking into when I was reevaluating my own personal beliefs versus what Hubbard had told me to think or believe. And it was that was one of the first things I tackled, because I thought to myself, is psychiatry really that bad? And I read, you know, some books and did some online research and came to the conclusion that it was not anywhere near as bad. And I realized, one day, he's just knocking the competition. Ding. Right, goes on. And suddenly psychology and psychiatry were not the horrible, evil, destroyers of mankind that Hubbard and Scientology make them out to be. I have found similar viewpoints and experiences in other former Scientologists I've spoken with. I haven't seen too many people hold on to this burning hatred of Scientology after leaving, of psychiatry after leaving Scientology. Some could, but I think most people, after they get out of Scientology, start opening their mind a bit, start living in the real world, and start realizing that there are real psychological issues and real psychiatric issues with people, and they really need help. And psychology and psychiatry are the only fields where people are investigating, studying, and really trying very hard to do work to help those people. Scientology is doing nothing for the mentally ill, and in fact refuses to. So it's kind of an odd position they take, that psychology and psychiatry must be destroyed, and yet they refuse themselves to do anything for the mentally ill. And so we've come to the end of another critical Q&A episode. Thank you very much. I would encourage you to leave any questions or comments you have in the comments section of this video. These Q&A videos are where I look to find questions from you to answer. I've still got tons of them, and I'm trying very hard to catch up on all of them, or as many as I can. So thank you very much for asking. And if I haven't gotten to any of your questions yet, if you've been leaving them, it's just a matter of time. I will get to them. So thank you very much for watching, and I'll see you next week.